At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
All right. Here we are, folks. Another moment with the Michael Steele podcast. So glad you could be a part of the experience. I'm Michael Steele. Certainly welcome you to the podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcast on. You know how that goes. You can follow me on Twitter at Michael Steele all the time. Although I don't do a lot of heavy tweeting. Wink, wink. Anyway, we got a lot to cover in this episode, because there's so much crazy going on. I needed someone who could come at this from a legal perspective, from a political perspective, from a cultural perspective, from a what the hell you doing perspective. And the only person I could think of to match all four of those qualifications was my good friend Sophia A. Nelson. She's an opinion writer with USA Today, The Daily Beast, Politico, and an MSNBC commentator. She gets to play in my backyard a little bit. Always enjoy the few times that we're on together, Sophia. It's always magic as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, I agree.
She's the author of the award-winning book, Black Woman, Redefined, Dispelling Myths and Discovering Fulfillment in the Age of Michelle Obama. Now, you know we're going to have to tap into that just a little bit. You can follow her on Twitter at I Am Sophia Nelson. Sophia Nelson, welcome to the podcast. So great to have you hanging out with the Michael Steele crew.
Well, Michael, it's my honor to be with you. Yeah, there is a lot of crazy going on right now, and I think that what's exciting to me about what you do on your podcast and then watching you on air, of course, is that you bring a different perspective. You always keep it real. You are a Republican by background, as am I. There are not a whole lot of us African-American Republicans left, if we're going to be honest, conservatives, however you like to classify yourself. And I think it's important, though, in this time that we have that different voice and that perspective. We're also people very active in our communities of color, et cetera. So I think we're out of the box.
That is true. I appreciate that. And that is all very true. It's particularly that last part, being out of the box, is something that I think, you know, we've actually had to kind of forge ourselves that way, because the conventional stuff just doesn't work. I mean, it never really has for Black Republicans, to the extent that, you know, you just kind of go along to get along. You want to be just another person in the room. But there's so much more that we bring to the table. And I want to get into a little bit of that from your perspective as someone who has been counsel at the White House, someone who has been, you know, politically engaged and involved. The president right now is out doing his thing. And so let's start with the legal piece. Mm-hmm. With Mueller, the word on the street around town is that investigation seems to be winding down now. Something in the back of my mind goes, yeah, maybe, but I'm just not sure yet. But, you know, what do I know? I'm watching it like everybody else. It's just my little gut may be off on it. But anyway, let's go with that. What do you think we will find out, discover? I mean, because he's been discreet like nobody's business, and it kills people in this town that they don't know what the hell he's doing or what's going on because no one's leaking. How do you see the details of the Mueller report, if it comes out publicly and if we get a chance to see it? What's your expectation? What do you think, from your legal analysis of this, we should be looking at?
Well, let me set the table for your listeners, because this next week, we're going into the weekend now, of course, and then this next week, Michael Cohen's going to testify on the Government Reform and Oversight Committee, which is my old committee where I served as a committee counsel back in the late 90s when Clinton was president. And I say that to set the table that the next 7 days, I think, are going to be fascinating to watch as it relates to the leaks and the word that I hear coming out of the Justice Department is that the Mueller report may be released as early as tomorrow, Friday.
Wow.
The thing that I think your listeners need to know, if you have been around Washington for a long time as we have, and if you're a political journalist or you are an investigative journalist, the statute, Michael, changed after the Ken Starr investigation. You recall, as I do, that when they wrote the Starr report, the infamous Starr report, that thing was not only public. People were waiting in line to get copies of it. This was the days well before we had the internet the way we do. Social media didn't exist at that time. And so people were literally waiting in line to get the copy from the GAO office. Well, they changed that statute now so that what Mueller does not have to do is what Starr had to do, which is make this report and give it to Congress. He only has to give it to the Attorney General. And that's a very important thing for everybody to know, because that's where the conflict's going to come in. And you already see senators like Mark Warner and others on the Democrat side, and even some Republicans saying, well, we don't want a summary of you redacting what's in
right.
the report to the Attorney General. We don't want you to tell us what you heard. We want to see it for ourselves, and more importantly, we want the public to see it. So I think the first thing we need to do to set the table, Michael, is to have your listeners and everybody understand that this next week, whatever Mueller does, it's going to go to the Attorney General, and then the Attorney General and his staff will review it, and then they will make the decision with an enormous amount of pressure from the Senate and the House to make that available to all the members of Congress and then make it available to the public, whatever's in it.
Why wouldn't they make this something? I mean, given the nature of the investigation itself, given the way the president has behaved in with regard to this investigation, the New York Times blockbuster report that came
right.
out earlier in the week,
right.
Where it was very clear that the president was doing everything in his power to obstruct this investigation, looking for every
right.
angle and corner to do so. Why wouldn't the counsel, special counsel, take it out of his hands? Why wouldn't Bill Barr, the new Attorney General, go ahead and say, you know what, for the good of the order, for the interest of full disclosure, send it to Congress, and at the same time make it fully available to the American people?
Well, that's a great question, and let's take that apart again. I think that what these podcasts should really do is help people get information and understand what the media, you know, when we're on TV, Mike, we get 2-3 minutes
right.
to talk. We can't break it down, but remember, Barr has been around before. He was Attorney General once before, I believe, for President W. Bush.
Right.
And he's a no-nonsense guy, a lot like Mueller. He's a respected guy, but I think he is in that classic conundrum, if you will, that Sessions found himself in and others. He's got a boss who is not like traditional presidents in that he leaves his Attorney General alone to do what he needs to do.
Right.
There's an enormous amount of pressure to get this over with, to have it done. And because of the change in statute, that's why I brought that up at the beginning, whereas Ken Starr had to release his publicly, Bob Mueller does not have to. And so what the Trump people can then say from the Attorney General's office and the White House will most certainly say is, it was a real nothing burger, no collusion, nothing was found, unless, you know, there's some big bomb drop in this Mueller report, which I don't expect, by the way. What I expect is that there will be a lot of confirmation of a lot of what appears to be nefarious activity between the Trump campaign and the Russians at many levels, vis-a-vis business dealings and financial dealings. That's why his tax records are so important. And what I think is going to happen is they're going to try to give the public some bullet points, if you will, right? Because it doesn't serve the Trump administration to have that report come out basically no matter what's in it, because you and I both know Bob Mueller is a serious man. He's a dot the I, cross the T kind of guy. He was former FBI director. No nonsense. So he's going to make sure that he connects all the dots. And I think that even if there's no smoking gun, Mike, that, yes, we have 100% proof that the president colluded with Putin, which, again, I don't expect to be there. I think there's going to be enough of a trail and enough of the dots being connected, that we'll all be able to draw some conclusions. So I fully expect the Attorney General's office to try to release some version of it, or maybe to the Gang of Eight, they release the whole version of those, you know, at the highest level, from the Speaker to the, you know, Senate Foreign Affairs Chair, et cetera, to let them have a view of it. But I think they're going to want to try to keep it away from the public.
That just creates an environment in which this report, let's just put it, will get leaked. I don't care what people say. This report will get leaked. And so they will be investigating who leaked that report 6 months from now. Trust me.
Oh, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And the leak will come probably from the White House.
I really don't care whether or not this works to the best interest of the White House. And that shouldn't even be dispositive in this discussion, whether or not the White House is happy with the report or wants to see the report. And the same is true, I think, for the Gang of Eight or people on the Hill. My estimation is, given what the country has been wrenched through, what we've gone through with all of this bullcrap for the last 2 years, that to then at the end of it have the worst denouement you could possibly have. It's like being in this gangbuster, watching this gangbuster movie, and at the end have nothing happen. I mean, it's just like,
right,
everybody just kind of goes to their room and close the doors and you fade to black.
Right. Well, I think that gets back into our culture, though, which there's a whole lot of stuff we could get into today, given what's happening on the TV.
That's the what the hell just happened segment. Yeah, we'll get to that.
What's important here, to your point, is where we go once we get the Mueller report, and do the checks and balances that the founding fathers put into the Constitution really kick in? Does Congress really get serious about its oversight responsibilities, regardless of partisanship? And I think that, again, anybody out there who's expecting a big bomb drop, I think you're going to be disappointed. I think that instead what you're going to get is a very complex roadmap of relationships, conversations, dealings, and quid pro quos that make a lot of inferences. Take, for example, Mike, the fact that McCabe has been going around for the past week, Andrew McCabe, with his new book, and he has said on TV any number of times, which every time he says it, it stops me and takes my breath away, he alludes to the fact that there's a possibility that the sitting president of the United States of America is a Russian asset.
Yeah.
That's one hell of a thing to say. And in my lifetime, I've never heard anybody say that.
How do you reconcile that then? Will you have someone like McCabe coming out and saying that based on his interactions with the president, the level of the investigations that, or at least the aspect, parts of the investigation he was aware of at the time he was in service? How do you reconcile that then with a report that comes out and just kind of goes, there's nothing to see here?
Yeah, I think you can't. But remember, we're in Trump world, and nothing that used to exist pre-2016 exists anymore. The conduct and the behavior from this president and this White House, and I'm speaking as a Republican my entire life, as you are, so I'm not some leftist hack Democrat. I am a never Trumper. I'm proud of that fact. But the conduct that has come out of this White House and the attacks on the press, the attacks on our institutions like the FBI and our intelligence agencies, it's unprecedented. So there's nothing that they can do that will surprise me anymore. And I fully do not expect them to fall in line and follow the rule of law when the last 2 years, Michael, we've watched them do everything to undermine the rule of law and our institutions. I'm talking about the president's tweets, calling the New York Times the enemy of the people. That is unacceptable for a president of the United States. That's authoritarian-like, it's dictator-like. We're on a very slippery slope, and we're really, in my opinion, we've been in a constitutional crisis for a while, but I don't think we've woken up to it just yet.
Well, yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of roiling around on this, and I'm sure Mueller, having been a creature of this town, kind of anticipates that. My thinking is, you got a lot of various variables out there that touch on certainly collusion, which I always thought was a red herring because collusion is not a crime. So playing that card and the emphasis placed on that by the president was really kind of slick because he's got people expecting Mueller to address the idea of collusion. Well, collusion is not criminal. Now, collusion can lead to criminal activity, but mm-hmm. colluding in and of itself is not a crime. But the president has very smartly labeled this whole thing as they're looking to show collusion. That's why he keeps saying no collusion. Well, doesn't matter if there's collusion or not because, it's not a crime. If there's no collusion, you can still commit a crime. So let's be clear here,
But again, I think what's important in setting the table, because I know that sometimes legal analysis and getting all to this makes people gloss over, their eyes get glassy, and they're like, oh my God, what are these people talking about? So I want to try to really break this down in the most basic of terms. Mike, you know that you and I have done a lot together over the last 2 years talking about the Constitution, the Founding Fathers, vis-a-vis my book, E Pluribus One,
right,
which I'm sure we're going to get into. But I think that we really need to start there with the citizenry, all of us, we the people, waking up and really grabbing a copy of the Constitution that you can get anywhere for $1.50, a copy at Barnes & Noble, you can get it off of Amazon, they'll send it to your house, and really reading the Bill of Rights and understanding that First Amendment and understanding what the function of Article 1, Article 2, Article 3, the courts, the Congress, and the executive, which is the president, and understanding how they all interact, how they shouldn't interact, what their powers are, what their powers are not. It's pretty simple stuff. And I think that, again, to your point, you don't need to have the big smoking gun on this one. Like, again, I doubt you're going to get some tape where you have Putin and the president of the United States conspiring to undermine the democracy of America. I don't think that's there. What I do think is what Linda Chavez said on TV the other day, that she believes Trump was an unwitting Russian pawn. And I'm inclined to agree, driven by greed, driven by business, driven by the lack of limitations, Michael, that he's had on him his whole life. People don't tell Donald Trump what to do. And he does what he wants to do. And the fact that he was running for president would have never occurred to him that, gee, that might not be proper. That might not be something I should do in the name of business. And I really think that's what Mueller's going to unearth. And you're right, there could be any number of criminal acts. Don't forget there's an unnamed co-conspirator in the Cohen indictment, if you will, right? You've got the Roger Stone issue pending out there with his indictment, and he's got to go to trial. So you've got, and then of course there's Manafort, right? So you've got a lot of people who were close to the president, very close, involved with him, all entangled in this, and they all can't be guilty and he be not guilty. I guess that's the way I look at it. So it'll be interesting to see what Mueller weaves together.
Yeah, I think that's right. And that all of that has fed into a number of narratives that we've all kind of had to deal with over the last couple of years, and one that you wrote on. And so I want to look at the next piece of this, which is political. How there are two parts of this that I think that are interesting under the political umbrella. One is the relationship of the president to the press. And you wrote a piece for USA Today 2 years ago now, in May of 17, talking about how the president and the press seem to be at odds, largely because of the president's own doing. There is, I think, some legitimacy to the complaint that the press is probably a little bit harder on him now than they were certainly during the campaign.
Right.
And so I think that there is some legitimacy to how some of this is like, you know, make up for all when we were really nice to you. So now we gotta, and you can't even sneeze right. But you talk about the idea of the president not liking nor completely understanding what a free press is, and how that has really kind of pushed at the political stability of the various estates. And by that I mean the judiciary, the legislative, the executive, and the fourth estate, which of course is journalism and the media. How has that political narrative played itself out, particularly given all the investigations, House, Senate, Mueller, Southern District of New York, D.C. Court system in Virginia, et cetera? How does all that come together?
Well, I think a couple things. You're referencing an article that I wrote in USA Today magazine, which is their Sunday magazine, and that came out right after E Pluribus One was released a few months after. And what I was talking about, and it's interesting because I had to write that article long before, because of the way magazines cycle, I had to write that article just after Trump had won the election. So at that point, we had not even gotten into, Michael, all that we saw unfold almost immediately after the inauguration. What I was going off is what I saw during the campaign, and what I see, and I think many others that do what you and I do for a living would agree, is the president's fundamental lack of understanding about how our system works. He's not a very intellectually curious man, unlike a Bill Clinton who stayed up and devoured information all the time, right, or Obama, or even W, or Daddy Bush, Reagan, etc. Trump, again, this is not his bailiwick. He's a businessman. He likes to do things his way. And so the press is a very unwelcome nuisance to him. Now, most presidents, if we were to get them on this podcast with us, I think would all agree that on any day they wish they could get rid of the press corps, because the press corps can be a real pain. It can ask them questions that are uncomfortable. It can make them have to talk about things they necessarily don't want to talk about. And I think all presidents have a love-hate relationship with the press. And that is the natural tension, Michael, that the founders wanted. They wanted it that way because they wanted the executive to always be accountable to we the people. And they knew the best way to do that was to have this wild and loose and fancy-free group of people called the press corps that would have the freedom and the ability to dig, to interview, to unearth, to dissect, to interject. And they did that to keep the executive honest and accountable beyond even just to the Congress and the courts. So I think that the answer to your question is, the way this all plays together with all the investigations and everything we're seeing, is that President Trump, because he lacks fundamentally self-control in a way that other presidents would never get on Twitter or on TV and openly attack the press corps. Now, Nixon did that, but Nixon is a different case.
Yeah,
right?
Nixon's different, but it's right. there's something different about this, though.
Absolutely.
This is, I mean, when you start labeling, when you're using words that the old Soviet Union banned after Stalin, because it led to the death of millions of people.
Yes.
And that's
where I was going. There's something, and I tweeted this yesterday, you saw, and it got thousands of likes and retweets, where I talked about when President Trump sent out that tweet about the New York Times. It really hit me in my core as a scholar, as a historian, but most of all as an American citizen, that this is just not how presidents in a democratic republic talk. You have to remember that, again, our system of governance is unlike really any other on earth. There are other republics, but the way we're founded as a constitutional republic and the way we're set up and the way we came about is very different, and we really honor that First Amendment.
The founders understood, unlike what King George had, there was no free press. He was pretty much a dictator and could do what he wanted because he was king. They didn't want that. So when they created, Madison, and in 1789 at the Constitutional Convention, when they are drafting up this document, James Madison, when they're drafting up this document, they are real clear that this First Amendment has to be powerful, and they want people to have free speech and expression, right? But they also want this press corps. They want a press that is free, that can dig, investigate, challenge, probe, and they did that exactly for the way we find ourselves right now in 2019, Michael, which is there are all these rumors going around about whether or not there was Russian collusion or whether or not there was something inappropriate. Did the Russians break in and hack our election system, et cetera, et cetera? And if without a free press, and that includes people, by the way, Michael, who aren't like you and I that are employed by networks or that write for major outlets, it includes people who are bloggers. It includes people who have something to say that are citizens and can challenge the executive in real time on Twitter, Facebook, whatever it is. And that is really the important difference of what makes America so unique as opposed to any other government on earth. And President Trump has really attacked that institution. He's attacked the Constitution that he says he loves, by the way. And he's attacked specific media outlets, which has in turn sanctioned violence, not him personally saying, I want you to go hurt anybody, but you understand what I mean. Did you see the report?
I think that there was some people who believe while he has not said, oh, I want you to go hurt somebody, he has applauded those who have hurt somebody.
Absolutely.
In the current situation where the Coast Guard member based out of Maryland planned to kill notable political and media figures, the president has been eerily silent in his tweet. I mean, now if this were, you know, someone
the Covington boys at the school,
right.
Yes.
Then the president's, you know, from 6 a.m. to right now or whatever, he's still all over it. So, you know, I think people, when it comes to this First Amendment concept, that, you know, a lot of people, I think, are having to really confront for the first time what it really means, because we've never had it challenged in a way that the founding fathers sort of anticipated. That's why it's the first, and it's spelled out. I mean, it's not like it's, you know, there's no other profession that's actually identified in the Constitution.
So, absolutely right, and your point is well taken. And I said this to someone the other day. You hit it nail on the head, which is this: is that the beauty and the challenge of being a free and open country the way we are and having this First Amendment, and we allow people pretty much to say what they want and whatever within reason. You can't yell fire in a movie theater. You can't engage in hate speech and things that you actually can, but it's a very fine line between what's the line
right.
I've crossed protected classes, right? But in this case, you're absolutely right. I think that people in America are not used to seeing a president talk like this or behave like this. And so in many ways, we've been slow to respond because we're not sure if we're supposed to just blow it off and say, oh, well, that's just him. And,
right.
you know, that's
well,
or no, does it mean something else?
Well, that leads me to going back to something we were talking about a moment ago. You were talking about the president occupying the White House, right? And I've kind of come to the conclusion, and this probably sounds a little harsh or whatever, but so what? Stop looking at him as nothing more than someone who occupies the Oval Office, because he's not president. I mean, he has the title. But how many of us know people at work who have titles and, like, yeah, right, okay, you got a title,
yeah,
baby, and that's all
there.
You got, right?
Right.
He's got the title. He's got the position. You know, on Morning Joe, I raised the point that something similar to this, and everybody kind of agreed, but they said, well, but he is the president, and we got to cover him. I'm like, well, no, you don't. Not the way you do.
Yeah, that's wrong, actually, and that is a complete misinterpretation and misunderstanding of the checks and balances, which, again, brings me to my old committee, the Government Reform and Oversight Committee, now the Oversight Committee, chaired by Elijah Cummings of Maryland, as you know, in the House side. And the reality is that that is not their job. And one of the big frustrations that I've had that's really challenged me as an American is watching my fellow citizens and watching Republicans and others make excuses for behavior that is simply not only unconstitutional, it's unbecoming of the President of the United States. And as you said, Michael, he may have the office, he may hold the office, but at the end of the day, he's supposed to represent something a lot bigger. He represents the United States of America abroad. He represents a trust, a belief, an accountability.
Well, but not only that, all of that's great. At the end of the day, he's a 72-year-old man. Stop acting like a 10-year-old. I mean,
well,
you know, from my perspective, you know, all of that, yes, and those are huge shoes to fill. And most people, by the time they're 72 years old, can fill any shoe you put on them, right? They, you know, it doesn't matter. They can wear the shoe because they've matured, they've got the experience, they have the knowledge that's surrounded by wisdom. They've got all these components. For him, none of that applies. And so what I find frustrating is the way the media feels that they still have to cover him like he's Barack Obama or George Bush or FDR or any other president. He's not. And so the question, I think, becomes, where do you draw the line? When you go to the circus, there's a three, you know, which we don't have anymore, but, you know, kids will go, what's a circus? What's a circus? But you know, we used to go to circus, there's this three, you know, the three rings, and there's the ringmaster.
Yep.
And you go in there, and you had an expectation of how the ringmaster would behave. They sort of control the order and flow of things, right? And so we come into this relationship with the president looking at all these, the legislative branch, judicial branch, and, of course, the media, you know, the fourth estate, and looking at how he sort of handles, you know, those areas, because all of that feeds into policy and politics and issues and all of that.
But right, Michael, I'm going to push back in this regard. We agree. Go ahead.
But he does not control the ring the way we've seen other presidents do. So you can't cover him like you covered Barack Obama.
Right.
You can't cover him like you covered George Bush. You, by now, 2 years into this, you should know that his standing in front of a helicopter where everybody has to strain to hear him and that he's, you know, he's there doing his thing is an instance of disrespect. It's not making himself available to you. It is making you work harder to do your job and to sort of to let you know how much control he has over you doing your job, and that he knows, and this is the part that really gnaws at me, he knows that whatever bright shining object he takes out of his pocket and throws up into the air and falls into a rabbit hole, the press will be like Pavlov's dog, go running after it and go down that rabbit hole, and he's won.
Well, I think you've said a lot there, and I think I agree with most of it, but I would push back in this regard and simply to say this so that, again, the listeners are being educated about what really matters, and you're absolutely right. The president, however, conducts himself this way because, in my humble opinion, the checks and the balances, look, the 25th Amendment that Andrew McCabe talked about, if we're being honest here, just looking at some of the tweets and some of the behavior and some of the damage that's been done to our relationships abroad, siding with the Russian president over your own intelligence agencies in a worldwide press conference. Those type of things are not normal. They raise the question of, who's this man loyal to? Is he fit for this office? There were a number of things that should have been done, and I have no doubt, Michael, would have been done had Barack Obama conducted himself this way or George W. Bush. For some reason, Donald Trump, because he was the celebrity apprentice, and I believe this, I believe people have given him not only a pass, but emboldened him because he's a celebrity, and they don't really see him.
That's really my point. He's the person who he's playing a role. He's occupying the space. He is not of and in the job. And so the sooner we start to appreciate that truth and stop thinking this man is on par with even our worst presidents, okay, going back in time, I think the sooner we're going to be able to deal with the day-to-day nonsense. Is he an agent of the Russian government? I happen to believe he is. Unwitting, but still an agent.
Yeah, I believe unwitting as well. I'm in agreement with that. Yeah. But, Michael, here's the thing I think you just said that's powerful, which is, and it goes back to a flaw in our system. There are only two ways, those of you listening to us right now, and again, I want to really help you understand the way our government works. There are only two ways to get rid of a president. You've either got to invoke the 25th Amendment, which comes through the cabinet, a majority of the cabinet and the vice president, then sending it off to the Congress, which then has to sign off on it as well. It's not as easy as people think, which is a defect or disability, right? Look at Franklin Roosevelt. Franklin Roosevelt was sick. He was incapacitated at some point, and then he dies. Well, the 25th kicks in, and then Truman automatically ascends to becoming the president of the United States, as any vice president would in the instance of a death or an assassination. Then there is the impeachment process. I have no doubt the Democrats could impeach him, Michael. My concern would be with the Republicans who control the Senate, remove him.
Yeah,
and I'm not sure
they wouldn't convict him. They won't convict him.
Right. So my point to you is, and my frustration and yours and everybody's, there's really no way to get rid of President Donald Trump through the mechanisms afforded us through the Constitution other than the ballot box, which isn't until 2020. So we are likely stuck with this, and I call it this because I don't know what else to call it. We are stuck with this juvenile behavior, this ugliness. For example, I promise you, I bet you a steak dinner right now, take you and your wife to dinner, that Donald Trump in the next 30 minutes or so weighs in on this Jussie Smollett thing and goes off about it and the hoax and the big hoax, but he won't say a word about the Coast Guard lieutenant who was planning to start a race war, assassinate elected officials. You know it's a big crime,
right,
to threaten to assassinate a member of Congress or a senator, right? And journalists on MSNBC, I'm hoping your name wasn't on that list.
No.
But some of our colleagues, Joe was on that list. There were people we love and care about who were targeted for assassination, and the president saying nothing. America, listen to me. Something is wrong with this picture. This is not normal. This is not okay. This is not what we do here. And, Michael, I think that's what has me more concerned. I have neighbors that defend this man in anything he does, no matter what.
Yeah, I don't understand that psychology, I suspect I probably never will. I mean, you have people who are sycophantic about Donald Trump who were nowhere near that with Ronald Reagan, and Ronald Reagan is like the patron saint of modern-day conservatism and the Republican Party, and yet they would very quickly throw aside Ronald Reagan to elevate Donald Trump. I don't get it. I think a lot of it has to do with the very sick fascination we have, our culture has come to get or have for celebrity and reality TV stuff that, you know, Donald Trump, sort of pawned off on people over a 10 or 12 year period. That stuck. I mean, the one takeaway from the election was that as I looked at the numbers and estimated what was going on, he took his audience and made them his voters.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they have this affinity for him. They are desperate for leaders or a leader who will do as he says. And they like that. So they'll forgive anything. I also, because I have this thing about the evangelical community right now and their capitulation and hypocrisy. And we were talking this morning on Morning Joe, author of the book. I forget his name real quick. Hopefully it'll come to me. But he has the book. In his book, he talks about this culture, the evangelical culture, and what he found was the evangelicals who supported Trump are typically those who aren't affiliated with the church, so they don't go to church every Sunday. The ones who go to church every Sunday, the ones who are like, they did not. And he cited a couple of communities around the country in which this evidence was borne out. But it again, you have all of these various pieces, which then leads to the third piece that I wanted to talk to you about, was the culture aspect of this. What does this say about our culture today? And how much has our politics corrupted our culture, or our culture corrupted our politics?
Well, that is a great question, and I think that's really at the heart of the matter where we began this discussion, Michael, which is we elected as president of the United States a man with zero political experience. People like to say Ronald Reagan was an actor. He was also governor of California, folks,
right?
The sixth largest economy in the world at the time. And so you're talking about a man who ran the largest economy in the United States. He was, yes, he was an actor, but he had political experience. And he served in the military, et cetera, et cetera. When you look at Donald Trump, you're talking about a person who's built his whole life on being self-promotion. He's built his whole life on wild ads, take the Central Park Five. He's off the hook things. He's been openly racist. Barack Obama wasn't born in America. Produce your papers, boy. Let me just break that down. When you tell somebody black who became president that you weren't really born here, you're saying, show me your papers, boy. This harkens back to the worst of who we are. Donald Trump was caught, Michael, saying on audio that he grabbed women by the genitalia and that you could do it. And women, 53% of white women, voted for him. What's my point? My point is Donald Trump is a reflection of who we are. And I know we don't like to have that conversation, but let's just have it. The reality is that we're staring into an abyss, and Donald Trump is staring back at us. He is who we've become. Callous, cold, mean on social media. We say anything that we think. We don't have any discretion. The statistics for people cheating in their marriage are at an all-time high. Hate crimes at an all-time high. We've just gone down this rabbit hole. So it's only befitting, Michael, that our president, our commander-in-chief, would reflect where the culture has sunk to. Now, the question becomes, is this where we're staying, or are we going in a different direction in 2020? And right now, I don't have an answer to that question,
I have a small answer to it. I think we stay. I think, in fact, we are where we are because people want to be where we are. I think that a lot of the concerns that have been expressed largely by older white America regarding the browning of this country, the integration of this country, the fulfillment of that integration by minorities becoming the majority. I think that there are all of these little pieces, instead of sort of recognizing the inevitable progress and change that comes from that progress, as was witnessed at the turn of the last century when immigrants from Europe came to this country, and who went through the same kind of yearning and churning, and you're Irish or you're Polish and you're German and you're Italian, and all those tensions that people forced into ghettos. What was the one thing they all had in common?
Immigrants.
No, they were white.
White immigrants. Okay.
They were white. So that integration wasn't that. I mean, that was more cultural. Right. That was
different.
It's a very different conversation because you're all from the same continent, Europe, but now all of a sudden you throw in the African continent, you throw in the Asian continent, you throw in, all these other very different pieces, and people are scared. They're concerned. That's why you hear this this Coast Guard officer, racist SOB that he is, talking about, oh yeah, you know, we gotta get white culture back because Europe is lost. That was the
yes.
That's so you have this fear that's out there, and I think we stay in this space until we are ready to really address those concerns. And God, I'm just telling people, if Donald Trump wins re-election in 2020, the last 4 years will look like a walk in the park. He will be off the hook with what he wants to do.
Let's talk about if we can, and I would love to hear your thoughts on where we are racially and as a nation. You know, my book, E Pluribus One, Reclaiming Our Founders' Vision for a United America, and people laugh at that. And they're like, wait a minute, Sophia, the country was half slave and half free when we started. Absolutely right. But our motto, E Pluribus Unum, out of many, one, they understood there was a vision for this country. If Thomas Jefferson were on this podcast with us, and Adams, and Washington, and Madison, and Monroe, all of them, they would all say to you, we knew slavery was wrong, we knew we shouldn't have done it, but we were thinking about the economics of this country, and we put that over everything else. And we paid for it in this thing called the Civil War, and then we went forward from there. And the reason I raise this is because, again, we have a president right now who fundamentally does not understand history, Michael. He doesn't understand the Constitution, and it's because of everything you said. That was never his purpose for running. You know, when you listen to a Kamala Harris, or you listen to a Elizabeth Warren, or you listen to any one of the Democrats running for president right now, they're talking about the things that we're used to hearing candidates talk about, right? They're talking about whether you have Medicare for all, health care, all this stuff. When you think about what Donald Trump ran on, I'm going to build a wall, and I'm going to make the Mexicans pay for it. And the things that he says appeals to the most base, racist, sexist instincts this great nation has had from its founding. And I think that's a very important point as we consider where we are right now in 2019. Look at the Commonwealth of Virginia, where I live. Our three highest office holders are embroiled in scandal over wearing blackface at some point in their youth. Another one accused credibly of sexual harassment or sexual assault by two women. And yet those three men are still in office. And do you know why? Because we've gotten desensitized, Michael. We no longer, I don't think, care about
How do you kick someone out of office when you elected a guy to office who said, hey, I want to grab ladies by their private parts, and they love it when I just walk up to them and start kissing on them? What are they going to do? I mean, how do we do that? Or when he goes about, you know, oh, there he is. That's my black. He's my black.
I think that what we're seeing, in some ways, perhaps it's a good thing, because we're having to take a really hard look at how ugly we are and how far down the rabbit hole. It's like Alice in Wonderland, right? We've gone down the rabbit hole. We're through the looking glass here. And at the end of the day, I think that people like yourself, myself, and others have to be that remnant, that residue, that patriotic force of Americans who say, and this is really the job of the press, to hold their feet to the fire, to hold them accountable, and you're right, Michael, we've done a bad job from day one with Donald Trump because we liked the celebrity. We liked that he was edgy.
Yes.
We liked that he said off-the-hook stuff. We liked that we knew he would say it and it would drive ratings through the roof. And so we get what we deserve.
Well, I look at it this way. It's like a parent who allows their child to run the house as opposed to the parents running the house. And
amen.
And so when you sit there and let Johnny do whatever Johnny wants to do, because you're just so amused by it. Oh, it's so funny. It's so cute when he takes his nose and he just, you know, pulls stuff out of it and rub it all over the couch. Oh, that's so funny. Yeah. Or when the guests come to the home and he starts showing his ass and acting up, and you just sit there and you just laugh and you go, oh, look at that. When you have a reality TV perspective on everything in your life that matters, you get reality TV results. Now, having
I really
having
hope
how was that?
Okay.
No, go ahead. What was
no,
that?
I was gonna say, I really hope that your listeners, you know, Michael and I are engaging in a little banter here because we've been, like I said, friends way too long. But I think we're saying something quite serious to encapsulate it. The lawyer in me wants to give them some takeaways. Number one, folks, I want everybody listening to us, get a copy of the Constitution. Google it. Read the Bill of Rights. The first 10, just read them. Read them to your kids. Talk about it. Get a copy of E Pluribus One book. Because it's going to help you to understand what your responsibilities are as a citizen. And what Michael and I are talking about right now is that our institutions have in many ways crumbled. Everything that we are supposed to stand for by electing this reality TV personality that we watch on Twitter say the most unbelievable things. And we almost wait for it with bated breath every morning. What's Trump going to say today? And what we've done is we've really put our democracy into a very difficult place. And what we're saying to you is we're trying to give you the legal perspective. We're trying to give you the political perspective. But I think there's also, Michael, a perspective that we, the people, need to take a hard look at who we are. Because our leaders tend to reflect and mirror our values and virtues, right?
Well, they do, but not only our leaders, but then our neighbors do as well. And that leads me into our last bucket, which is what the hell is up with that? And this bucket is filled this day by one Jussie Smollett, who is charged with disorderly conduct for filing a false police report in the attack that he alleged occurred to him. Now occurred on him. The bottom line is this guy, folks who aren't familiar with him, he's an R&B singer, he's gay, he's an activist, he's African-American, he's the star on one of Fox's hot TV programs, The Empire. He told Chicago police that he was the victim of a racist hate crime, a racist and homophobic attack, rather, on a downtown street last month. And it's come to find out that after talking to the two individuals that they are the suspects in committing this, that he actually paid them to perpetrate this attack on him. What the hell is going on here? I don't even understand why. I don't even get the why you would go there, given his stature, his celebrity, talking about celebrity, his celebrity. In fact, I had probably a week before this incident occurred, not even a week before this incident occurred, he was on our network promoting some advocacy work and that I thought was very good. And I tweeted out about it and say, hey, you know, bravo, good stuff. And then here we are a week later. All of a sudden now he's attacked. Everyone rushed to judgment on Twitter. Some people did not. Some people were like, well, let's wait and see what's this. And then the others, of course, those who were more supportive of Trump took a much more aggressive tone and pushed it back, now seem or at least feel vindicated in that. What is this? Because this kind of wraps all of this together, the political, the cultural. What's going on here?
Well, a couple things. I just literally, as you were talking, a tweet popped up from Fox and Friends says, Jussie Smollett could have caused race riots. Now, let me just let that sit there for a moment and just let that marinate.
See? Dude, that's just dumb. That's just dumbass media stuff from Fox.
It is. But let's go back to, because you're right, it does tie together. Jussie Smollett, who has everything in the world theoretically going for him, right? He's a young man, the prime of his career, he's making money, he's got hit records, you know, he's in clubs. And this young man, according to what the police chief said, and I'm going to go by because the lawyer in me, like you, wants to deal with facts, the police chief, Eddie Johnson, when he held this conference, and I thought he was awesome, as an older black man, basically saying, man, boy, what have you done? Because now you've undercut the stuff we deal with every day when young black men like Laquan McDonald are shot to death by police, or right, we're dealing with epic violence. Now you've come in, you paid $3,500 to two men to stage an attack, that they lynched you, that they put a rope around your neck, and worse, Michael, Jussie tied this to the Make America Great Again.
Right.
So you know the Fox people, you know Trump, you know that the whole right, white, conservative movement in this country is going to be all over this. I even saw a tweet from Nikki Haley, which shocked me, saying that he should serve time. That's what a potential Republican presidential candidate tweeted, who I don't think should have weighed into this. Go to her Twitter feed, check me so that you know I'm telling the truth. I was stunned. Why did I bring that up? To answer your question, the reason that we find ourselves here is exactly what you and I just spent the last 40 minutes talking about, which is this. We are in a culture now that it gives you permission and makes you feel entitled to say anything, do anything, demand anything. And if you don't get your way, you feel entitled, Jussie Smollett, to create this wild story that somewhere in the back of your mind, you got to know you're going to get caught, right? And you feel entitled because you want to create attention for yourself that makes you a victim for being gay, for being black. And then you can use that victimhood, Mike, to go and demand more money at your job. What the police chief said is that he did all of this because he wanted more pay. He was not liking the pay that he was getting, apparently, on Empire.
See, please don't tell me that. Because,
no, that's because I can't make that up. That's
because
real.
Because if that's the motivation for putting together this hoax, what it does to the victims of true hate violence, who the next individual, gay person, black person, woman, Hispanic, who's the victim of some form of hate crime.
Breaking news, the president just tweeted, as I told you he would, and here's what he said. Let me tell you. Quote, what about MAGA and the tens of millions of people you insulted with your racist and dangerous comments? This is coming from Mr. Charlottesville. They're fine people on both sides.
And
you get it?
And please check and tell me that he has something to say about the Coast Guard officer who was planning to go out and commit hate crimes on countless numbers of people.
Not a word. And he's not going to, because he's feeding into what you and I have been talking about. And to your listeners, I'm telling you, we're making sense today. We're trying to break down to you that the reason we find ourselves where we are, whether it's Jussie Smollett defrauding the police and filing false police reports because he wants a raise, instead of just going to your boss and making your case and saying, well, I'm a really good actor, and I've got a prime role on this show, and I think I'm worth another couple hundred thousand an episode or something. No, we make up this elaborate lie and scheme. We put LGBTQ people at risk now, like you're saying, Michael, because when the real hate crime happens, now the rest of us are going to be like, yeah, right. Is that real?
Right.
And when the next black man gets a noose put around his neck, like happening that the GM plant where they left nooses in the lunchroom. Yes, in 2019, we're not going to, those among us who don't want to believe that racism exists anyway, seize on this type of thing. And now the president of the United States of America has weighed in, as he always does, on the side of his people, his base, and not dealt with the bigger issues facing us as a country. We're in bad shape, and it's a disappointing time for me because I love this country. I was raised in a military household. I've taken the oath as an attorney to the Constitution, as you have when I got sworn into the United States Supreme Court. And I believe in this country. And Donald Trump has really hurt this country with his behavior, period.
And on that note, it was an absolute joy sharing the mic with a good friend, with a sister who comes not just correct, but smart and correct, baby. She brings it. She is Sophia Nelson. You can check out her work at USA Today and the Daily Beast, Politico, and certainly watch for her on TV, MSNBC, and maybe some other channels to come in the future. Definitely check out the book, Black Woman Redefined, Dispelling Myths and Discovering Fulfillment in the Age of Michelle Obama. Hey, this was a great conversation.
Mike, we want him to check that out too, but those are my female books. What I really want you all to buy is E Pluribus One, Reclaiming Our Founder's Vision for United America, because I think that's probably the most relevant to our conversation here today.
Well, that's good.
About our country and our foundings. And thank you, Michael. I'd be remiss if I didn't say thank you for being a true big brother. It means something in the age of Me Too, which we didn't get to touch on, that yes, we can have male mentors who help us, support us. They look out for us. They open doors for us. And I want everybody to know that you've done that for me for years. I look forward to someday returning the favor. And
what you do. Just move it forward. That's all you have to do. Move it forward.
All
and
right,
you do through your books, your writings, and the conversation you have. It's an important lessons all around. So we really appreciate you, Sophia. Thank you so much for hanging out with the Michael Steele podcast crew.
Thanks for having me. Keep doing what you do, man.
You got it. Before I go, just want to just raise one little thing with you. You know what happens to most of us at some point or another? Debt just sort of creeps up on you. You know how that is? How many of us have looked at our finances and screamed, "How can we make this much and still have so much debt?" Unexpected repairs, replacing the washer and dryer, medical bills, and of course the killer, those insane interest credit cards you had to use to pay for it all, right? Here's a really smart move that could help you get on top of your finance. Get a fixed-rate personal loan at bestegg.com. The rates are great right now. And now imagine finally being able to pay down those crazy high credit cards and bills and then bank the money you save each month. Consumers have rated Best Egg 4.8 out of 5 stars on Consumer Affairs because of the super easy online app that takes about a minute with no impact to your credit score. Upon approval, funds can be deposited in as little as one business day. So get your bills under control. Bank what you save. And take control of your finances with a loan from BestEgg.com. Visit BestEgg.com/plan. That's BestEgg.com/plan. All right, folks, that'll do it for now. But you know we'll be back. And in the meantime, download. Don't forget to download on Stitcher Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts on. And check me out on Twitter at Michael Steele. Peace out.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.